Now, there's many things that can make us wake up in a cold sweat, particularly now in this situation we all find ourselves in. But William Leith wakes up in a cold sweat about the fact that some people can make money and other people can't. And he joins us now. Good morning, William.
Well, good morning.
Is it a William or a Bill? Are you always William?
Actually, I am mostly William. My son's Bill, so I get William. So yeah, that's what you should call me. And what should I call you?
Oh, definitely Bill. Only your mother ever called me William, and that's when I'd done something wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe there's something in that if I retain that name, but let's not get into the
maybe. Yeah. Now, this is a fascinating subject for a book. It's called The Trick, and you are saying that you wake up in a cold sweat because you're just really worried about why people can make money and you can't. Join the club, William. It must be a William thing, then.
Well, The funny thing is that I found myself interviewing rich people, and then as the years went by, super rich people. And of course, I always wondered every time I met them, whether it was Alan Sugar or whether it was Howard Schultz, the guy who started Starbucks, or eventually the Wolf of Wall Street. I always wondered, what was it in their makeup that had driven them to make all this money? Of course, the Wolf of Wall Street, who was then 100 million in debt, was perhaps the poorest person I'd ever met. although he was still he was bouncing back and making money by teaching crowds of people to make money. So all of these people had something in them, and I kind of wondered what it was, and I also wondered, did this ability make them happy?
Good question.
And I remember I was interviewing this guy. He's dead now, and he was called Felix Dennis, and he had made about 500 million quid.
He's a magazine mogul guy, right?
That's right. He was a magazine mogul, and he'd started out by promoting movie memorabilia and sort of merchandise for things like Star Wars. And it started out, actually, Bruce Lee merchandise all that time ago.
Wow.
So he'd made all this money, and yet he had ended up on crack and having a total crisis. And the basic thing was that he'd made, you know, well, however many millions, say roughly 500, and he kind of wished he'd stopped after about the first 30. You know, what was the point of that second 470.
It has to be said, though, and one of my friends used to be really matey with him, and he would go and stay with him at his various mansions around the world, and he certainly knew how to throw a party, by all accounts.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he ended up saying to himself, I really wish I'd been a poet. And so he ended up giving these events where he would get up on stage and read poetry to a crowd. And the wine would be free. Wow. So he'd attract a big crowd. And he said that poetry saved his life, and he wished he'd been a poet from the start, or at least, you know, from somewhere close to the start, because you can never really spend 500 million, or rather you can, but it's not necessarily going to make you much happier than if you spend, say, 100 million.
How interesting. Why didn't you just give the rest to us then, us poor people?
Well, exactly. The thing is that, in a way, what drives the super rich people is that excitement of discovery, that they've found something that works. Mm. They've suddenly found this, a sort of trick that works, and they've seen something, and, oh my God, if they can manufacture this at scale, how much are they going to make? And that rush of the excitement of discovery is something that they're always chasing. It's all, I think it's a bit like an addiction.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes something so precise that it's very hard to explain. But for instance, I think, you know, Alan Sugar was trying to make these hi-fi systems, trying to make them cheaper than those of his rivals.
Yep.
So he was thinking, how, you know, if I make these at scale in bulk, if I can make them, you know, every little bit of this thing a few quid cheaper, then I'm going to beat my rivals. And there was one point in his life where he was thinking, you know how those old hi-fi systems, they had lids?
Yeah.
So it was like you lift the lid up and then there's a turntable. It's like a dust cover.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if you wanted to make some turntables, you had to go to the person who made these lids. And so, of course, they charged quite a lot for the lids. And he was once at his mother-in-law's house, and she was making tea, and he noticed that she had this butter dish. And he thought to himself, that is just like a miniature version. There's like a Perspex top to it. If you remember, like in the early 70s, there'd be these butter dishes with a Perspex top. And
it
he
did.
Would think, you know what? If I could get somebody who makes those butter dishes to actually make the lids, then the other people wouldn't have a monopoly. And I'd be, and so it's thinking on that scale,
wow.
Every little thing.
Is there an element of this that they're not afraid to be in debt for a lot of money, whereas, you know, as normal people, you know, if we're 10 quid overdrawn at the bank, we start to panic that we're going to prison, whereas they can manage to rack up millions of debt without worrying or losing a moment's sleep?
Yeah, I think that's true. A certain sort of rationality and coldness. But also, I beg your pardon there.
No problem.
For some people, most people want, when they want to think about their careers, they look for safety. So they say, oh, I'm going to work for this company here. Mm. And because everybody wants to do that, it makes safety sort of overpriced so that people can afford to pay people not very much money because they're offering what appears to be safety. But if you go out on your own, there's apparently no safety.
Mm.
But of course, if you make it work, then the opposite of safety, being out on your own, is underpriced. So you can actually be much more effective if you can be out in the cold.
Yeah.
And of course, that's true, and this is a bit technical, but that's true for people who make bets on the stock market. You can make bets that are going to lose you money in the short term. But if there's some kind of shake-up, you win big.
Mm.
And lots of people are afraid to make those bets because they're going to be losing a bit of money here and there.
Yep.
But then the next, and of course, there's more shake-ups than people think there will be.
Mm.
So you get people who say, well, I'm going to bet. I'm going to bet against these banks in terms of whether there's going to be a little bit of a crash, and they're going to lose money every day. And then when there is a crash, they get a huge payout, and they actually end up doing much better than if they'd bet on the success of their stocks and so on.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And of the people you met, I mean, you met some interesting people. You basically swanned around on private jets and went to private clubs and disappeared off to private islands. That's not a bad gig, to be honest, as an author. But some of the people you met, I'm interested in the Russian half-billionaire who lives on his own with only a butler for company.
Well, he's since got married, I have to say.
Oh, bless him!
The interesting thing was, he was this guy who had made a vast amount of money in the world of women's clothes, and he'd found a sort of price point. So these are not designer clothes for thousands, but they're sort of more expensive than Zara.
Right.
And he had lots of outlets in all over the Far East and all over America, and he found. In fact, within price points, he'd found price points. So, you know, you get So he has various lines of clothes, and he tries to find the point in the market where he's going to win. And he was brilliant at doing that. Anyway, so he was, there he was, and he bought what I think is one of the nicest houses in the country, built in 1700, originally designed by, the original drawings by what's his name, Sir Christopher Wren.
Yeah.
Finished by Nicholas Hawksmoor, his assistant. This beautiful house, beautiful grounds, you know, with the, you know, those kind of like trimmed hedges and lines of trees and the beautiful reflecting pool and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
And when I went to see him, there was this house, and, you know, it had been lived in by aristocrats for 300 and some years. And you imagine, you know, the carriages pulling up and the servants and the parties they'd have had in the ballroom and all of this. And I said, so, you know, who do you live with? And well, just me, really. apart from my butler.
Wow.
He had this butler. And I said, so what, you and your butler live in this house in all these grounds? They even had a church, no congregation.
Goodness.
But the bells rung, you know, every so often. And I said to him, so of course, the butler does the cooking. Yes, the butler does the cooking. And I said, so what, you dine together in the evenings then? Oh, no. I sit at the table. And he eats in the servants' quarters.
Oh, goodness me.
And so this, I thought, we've sort of gone through the looking glass here.
Yeah.
This is slightly odd.
But he's now married, you say, so that's a big step forward. How did he meet somebody?
Well, because, of course, as he said to me, and I can't do his accent, I'm surrounded by beautiful women, because, of course, he was designing women's clothes. And so he used his house and garden as a backdrop for the photo shoots with all the models. And in fact, he was a model appeared at one point, and I could sense that there may have been some budding romance there. Turns out she already had a boyfriend, but she introduced him to one of her friends, apparently, who he did marry.
Oh, my God. I wonder if she's on commission.
So this made me think, you know, all of this is slightly odd. If you're driven to, you know, like open a new cafe somewhere in the world every 2 days or whatever it is, or if you're, I've got a, let's just say I've been under lockdown for...
I was going to say, isn't it funny now when people cough, we go, oh, my God.
I know. It's the weirdest thing. So I always think that people who make these vast amounts of money, also there's an element of getting used to luxury. And the times that I actually analyzed myself, the times that I'd had money, not, of course, on that scale, but if I'd had made some money, you very quickly get used to a slightly higher standard.
Yes.
Luxury.
Yeah.
And what it is you've got some kind of, and I described it as you've got like some inner bully, which is saying, go on, you know, have that extra, have the expensive steak, get the taxi, you know, fly in a higher class, get the first class seats, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And this kind of inner bully kind of pushes you in this way. This is the opposite of what we're having now, which is the joy of frugality, which is you say, I've got two onions and a carrot. What on earth can I? Oh, God, there's a potato. Thank God for that. I can make a stew. So I don't have to go to the supermarket or whatever. Mm. Whereas when you're used to the loveliest things, they don't seem lovely anymore. You can have them anytime you like.
Yeah, it's true.
And
it's true.
Your standard is just... is just off the scale. And so you have therefore sort of left reality behind.
Yeah.
And that's what makes people have this kind of, I think, a sort of existential crisis. when you're not in the same boat, as it were, as everybody else. You know, you're on the yacht, in fact, if you see the film Titanic, they make that point very well. You've got the very rich people being served their caviar and bitching at each other, and then the people in the hold having all their dances and parties. Do you remember that?
I do, absolutely. And it reminds me of Madonna's recent comment that you know, from her bath with surrounded by rose petals, telling us all that the coronavirus was a great leveler because it was just as bad for really, really rich people as it was for us.
I saw that, and I've seen these kind of like these pictures of people, and they say, are they in a park? And it's
a house. Absolutely. And just to finish off with, before we go, do you now wake up in less of a cold sweat now you've done this book and have talked to these people?
I think so, yeah. I think it makes you a little bit more measured, and you sort of think, I wouldn't swap. You always want a bit more money,
yeah.
But you wouldn't swap your lives for them.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't want to be somebody who, you know, it's great. It would be great having everything you want for a day.
Yeah.
I mean, like private jets. I mean, how wonderful! You don't have to queue. Everything's different.
Yeah.
But you'd just get used to it, and it would mean nothing.
Mm.
So in every sense. What is true wealth is your connection with other people.
Totally right. Totally right. What a good way to finish. That is indeed true wealth. Well, William, the book is called The Trick. It's fascinating. Tons of really interesting insights in there. We really appreciate you coming on and talking about it this morning. And from one bill to another, you take care of yourself.
Okay. Thank you.
All the best.